Log Talk Radio.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Millick.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this live broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat here on the EmotionalPro.com radio page or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL page. Also, call us on our toll-free number, 800-630-7858. On March 31st, we hosted Paul Helfrich, who's been studying, working with, and speaking on the sense material for more than 30 years, to be our, and he was our guest. And it's a very good basic course on sense ideas and thinking, and if you missed the show, I recommend you listen to it after today's broadcast. Seth was channeled by Jane Roberts and is credited with kicking off today's spiritually directed activities by introducing us humans to the notion that we create our own reality. Like Elvis in the music field, Jane Roberts and Seth set the tone for what was to follow, spiritually speaking, for about the next 40 years. And today we're experiencing a resurgent interest in Seth and his ideas. On that same show, we invited my friend and co-host, life coach, Dakey Fox. Today, we've invited Paul Helfrich and Dakey Fox back to Full Power Living to help us explore the topic of channeling. We hope you enjoy this exploration, learn from it, and ask your questions either on our chat or on the toll-free number, which again is 800-630-7858. Paul Helfrich, Ph.D., can be found on the web at paulhelfrich.com. That's P-A-U-L-H-E-L-F-R-I-C-H. He's been exploring the Seth materials for more than 30 years, as well as attending and presenting at Seth conferences since 1996. He was the admin for the SethNet email list from 98 to 2009. And regarding Seth, Paul's an essay author, lecturer, and workshop presenter who also talks about the channeling phenomena and integral psychology. He's a musician as well, and his 2003 Mindscapes music CD is available on iTunes, Rhapsody, and CD Baby. Dakey Fox is a great friend and teacher, a radio show host, and she's facilitated numerous channeling events, conducted research with channeled entities, and has edited channeled information for publication. She's a cultural creative life coach who shares with clients the journey of curiosity about what it means to be human, as well as how to embody our divinity in service to a world that works for everyone. You can reach her at Coach Dakey Fox, that's C-O-A-C-H-D-E-K-I-F-O-X at gmail.com. Dakey is the mother of three adult children. So, Paul Helfrich and Dakey Fox, welcome to Full Power Living.
Good morning, Eileen.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Dakey.
So, Paul, let's start with Eileen. Oh, you're quite welcome. I'm glad to have you both here. And Paul, let's start with you. I think a lot of people find channeling frightening, or they see it as something that's fake, impossible, not scientific. So I want you to start by demystifying channeling for us. I know you have a wide amount of information available, so if you could pull it down into a few gems to help us understand what channeling is and why we don't need to be afraid of it or discount it.
Sure. Well, just to recap from our last discussion back in March, that channeling is something that has always been with human beings. And depending on the cultural context and cultural milieu, it is popular or not popular and useful. And I think that it traces back at least over 3,000 years in the written record. So there's a lot of written evidence that it has always been with us. In recent times, however, due to the scientific worldview, which bases its knowledge on the five senses only realm, channeling is more subjective, and so we don't really know from a scientific point of view what or who is coming through, so it tends to be categorized as a pathology or even as demonic possession in religious worldviews. So that's just a general worldview of how channeling is presented or understood right now. There's an emerging new worldview, of course, where we're looking at channeling with a more scientific lens in terms of developmental psychologies. And what I have discovered, I've been researching this for the last 13 years pretty heavily, is that it's really a spectrum of altered states. So it's an altered state where a person goes into a sort of waking dream, and we all dream every night, so that's something we can explore in our own consciousness to at least feel into what a channeler must be doing. And just to wrap it up, on the extremes of the spectrum, we have what is called full trance channeling, where the channeler steps aside. So in Jane Roberts' case, Jane would go to sleep, basically, and another personality named Seth would come through with different facial gestures, emotions, and an intellectual capacity that far outweighed what Jane was capable of. So that's on one end. And the other end of the spectrum is what's called conscious channeling, where the channeler is basically in an alpha sort of state, which is the kind of state we're in right before we fall asleep, so it's not a deep sleep state at all. So the channel is somewhat present, but this other energy, personality, tone comes through and delivers information. So that's an overview of what channeling is.
Great. Wow, that's very, very well done. I want to make note, too, I noticed on your website that you are talking about a man named John Klimo, K-L-I-M-O, who wrote a very exhaustive taxonomy of channeling that I think was published in the late 90s. And so for people who are interested in more in-depth than we are able to go today, I think that sounds like it would be a really wonderful resource.
That's a great resource. It's the de facto standard still in transpersonal and integral psychologies right now on channeling. John is a good friend, and he's a senior professor in the West Coast.
All right. Thank you. So what's the benefit of channeling for human beings? And either one of you, maybe, Dave, what do you see as the benefit of channeling? And then we'll go to you, Paul, on that one.
Okay. Well, you know, just off the top here, I believe that the benefit is very much has to do with our ability to get greater perspective. It's sort of like being able to climb maybe up onto a hillside and look over at what's going on below instead of being down there with a machete bushwhacking our reality all the time. In addition to just being an additional perspective, what we can get from the channeled information, it also provides a broader perspective, generally speaking. So I'll just start that conversation with that.
And I'll just add that the benefits of channeling are enhanced creativity, spontaneity, and imagination. And within that, we get into the arts, of course, and, of course, inspiration for the sciences. And I think even deeper as we get into philosophical, spiritual, and religious areas, it tells us, it's evidence through our direct experience that we are not limited to our physical bodies, that we are, in fact, multidimensional beings that transcends the physical world.
Is that one of the things that scares people, that channeling opens that door, that we are so much more and we... You know, I remember years ago when before I did a lot of therapy, when I would have people look me in the eye, and I would be terrified that they looked me squarely in the eyes because I felt that they could see something in me that I couldn't see in myself. And I'm kind of wondering if channeling might scare us in a similar way. What's your thinking on that?
I think you hit the nail right on the head. Because we have been taught that we're limited to our bodies and our five senses only perceptions are real, and that dreaming, imagination, and daydreaming, reverie is all fake and hallucinatory and not real, that once we find a modality that opens the doors to explore those areas, it can be unsettling. And in fact, when you get into a body of work like the Seth material or any body of perennial philosophy, you have to make a radical reorientation as to what is real, what's not real, what's possible, what's not possible, and understanding that we are a multidimensional being. And I use the analogy of an iceberg, that the tip of the iceberg is what our physical body is in the physical realm, but the submerged part that goes on in a vast, vast underground ocean of a non-physical domain or a source domain is what we're really connected to and part of. And opening to that, and Seth refers to that submerged part of the iceberg as the unknown reality, because we've forgotten it, and that's part of our evolutionary trajectory, by the way. We're in the midst of a billion-year evolutionary path where we've remembered things and forgotten things, that as we start to open the door, we've developed amazing physical, intellectual, scientific, technological capacities right now. And as we start to reassess or reopen the doors to this unknown reality, this unknown self, and channeling being one primary modality in which to do that, it is scary. And that's why you need capable teachers and a community to share that with and explore that with.
Well, you know, another way that I was scared, I've been a psychotherapist for 40 years, and I learned a lot through my membership in the Spiritualist Church, and I got inspired there and by reading Seth's information, and I was actually using it in working with myself and working with my clients, but I was afraid to let anybody know. And I broke through that by publicly hosting a past life regression workshop in my office in the 1980s. And that was a big doings in the 1980s. It seems like channeling is a lot more prevalent now. You said it, we go in and out of popularity, but do you think that channeling's more prevalent now?
I think so, and I think we can attribute this directly to the work of Jane Roberts and Seth and her husband Robert Butts. The popularity and the clarity of her writing and Seth's teaching open the door for today's array of channelers that are out there and making a living or doing it publicly and privately as well. So, and the scholars that study this, John Climo, Arthur Hastings, Michael Brown, who are among the preeminent ones, all point to Jane Roberts' work as being a key demarcation from the past to the modern or postmodern era of channeling.
So now, Vicki, let me get back to you. You have also been involved in channeling, but a lot of that has been in facilitating the channeling work of others. And so I have a couple of questions for you. Why were you not afraid to do that yourself? And can you tell us what it was also that you were doing and with whom?
I can start, and I just want to applaud what you just mentioned, Paul, about Jane Roberts' work, because I think that it's, I think of a quote that I attribute to Michael Beckwith, and he said, "The pain pushes until the vision pulls." And there was a clarity of vision that came from the Jane Roberts work that pulled us into questions that would otherwise be not, maybe not painful in terms of the quote, but frightening. And the resonance with the truth of what she said showed up in me as a curiosity. And I was able to engage what I think is the more energetic level of my being, which is part and parcel to channeling. So there's the material realm in the everyday life, and then there's the other, some have called it 95% of our brain that we wonder actually why it's there, because we're not using it. And that has to do with our navigation of the energy realm, which Seth and Jane Roberts and channeling of all kinds really introduces us to and brings us into our own choice about how to enter that territory, what path to walk. There are many ways to do it, and my own path was that I met John Fox, and I had some connection with channeling in other ways, very subtle, and some reading, but this was about 1982 or 83, and this, you know, was pretty new. And I really engaged him as a person, and the channeling kind of just came along with it. He had only just begun channeling his entity, non-physical consciousness known as Hilarion. And So he had done maybe one or two group sessions with friends. But other than that, it was a very personal experience. And it did grow into, and still is, a way in which he operates in the world and allows voice to Hilarion as a trans channel. So my engagement with it and my subsequent partnering with Hilarion, as I consider him to be a non-physical consciousness friend, was a matter of just treating the information very practically. And for me, the criteria had to do with, is it practical? Is it something I can use as a parent? Is it useful in my life? And in my work in conducting, that was the way I asked questions for greater clarity about how that energetic and consciousness realm interfaces with my physical existence as an ego, as a person who's in a body surviving and vulnerable, as well as an aspiring consciousness that's curious about awakening my own divinity and my closeness with God and all that is. So for me, that's how I proceeded. And that was also how I assisted other people who would come to Hilarion get rather esoteric and sometimes very long sentence information in response to their simple question,
right.
Is this relationship right for me? And just break it down with them and say, well, is it true for you or not? And again, that's the real cutting edge of channeled information, is that it's a way for us to cut our teeth on taking responsible present action and making choices about things we don't really know the whole answer to. Go ahead.
That's a really good point. You bring to mind, let me put out my channeling experiences. About 1975, I was invited to be in a meditation group led by a woman named Kay Hamill, who was a student medium in the Spiritualist Church. And we started out with seven people. Within a year, there was only my husband and myself in the group. And after a while, it began to be clear that we were hearing the same voice when she would give us some kind of information. It turned out it was the same voice, and after a while, we got strong enough to ask if it was a particular entity, and we were told we could call this entity Simon. And that brings up a point that I want to make for anybody who might be frightened about channeling. Simon had, you know, there was some connection with other things that he chose that name, but it also was for a sense of humor, because from there on, as we got information, we would be saying, Simon says this, Simon says that, which in this culture is kind of funny because of the childhood Simon Says game. And as you say, Dickie, it was vital to us. We got so much information and guidance about how to navigate the tiniest little aspects of life that helped us start getting stable. And that was the test. Was this helpful to us? So that's very, very great. Do you have any comment on that?
I just want to reinforce that you both hit the nail on the head again, that the bottom line to any body of channeled information or creative body of work for that matter is its practical application in your everyday life, and it's up to each of us to experiment in the laboratory of our own personal experience. And these are wonderful stories that you're telling, and we all have a lot of stories where we're verifying these things in our own experience, which is why we're here today talking publicly about it, that this is very real. It is not pathological. And in fact, it's part of our heritage that goes back to our spiritual roots in the very creation of our world. And so the practical application is a key thing, and you must bring a skeptical approach to any channeling session, any body of channeled work, as well as scientific work for that matter. It's a scientific attitude that we have. And I also want to add, too, that within channeling, another general statement to help us understand channeling better today is that I believe it's what's called a multiple intelligence. And this comes from developmental psychology and the work of Howard Gardner, who didn't invent it, but he was the one who ran with this in the 1980s and 90s and developed this very thoroughly. Essentially, he found that in relation to different parts of our brain, we have mathematical areas, linguistic areas, musical areas, kinesthetic areas, moral areas, interpersonal, intrapersonal. And so we can be good, not so good, and really good at different areas of these intelligences. And as I was researching this and studying this, I had an epiphany as I studied the work of Ken Wilber, who is the preeminent integral psychologist and theorist today. And I was going through his integral psychology book, and I saw a chart, and suddenly the light bulb went off. It's like, oh my goodness, according to his model of all the world's religious traditions, here's one way I can explain channeling that as a multiple intelligence, it actually crosses our waking self, our dreaming self, and our deep soul self, and allows them to communicate with each other depending on the ability of the human being and the soul relationship to harmonize. So that's there's different degrees of channeling. Jane Roberts was a virtuoso and sets a gold standard that I think everything since her can be measured against. And, you know, there's other things where it's comes out in beginning terms, it's more malformed, it's not as clear, might meander. But this is not to put that down. That's very, very important. And if you're out there listening today and you're experimenting on a Ouija board, or you've had altered states where something comes through and a friend reminds you when you come out of it that another personality came through or something, this is not something to be afraid of. It's something to just work yourself through as patiently as you can, and of course avail yourself of all the information you can today with the internet and the availability of folks like Dakey, myself, Eileen, and others, many others, are there to help.
Paul Helfrick, PhD, who's author, lecturer, musician, and Seth scholar, and with cultural creative life coach Dakey Fox, and we're talking about channeling with a special focus on the channeled works of Seth. You're listening to Full Power Living. Stay with us.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them. Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula to get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. This is Eileen Dillon, and I have a few announcements. Talk with us right now on either one of our chats on the emotionalpro.com/radio page or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. And if you miss us live, you can download our archived podcast from the radio show page on emotionalpro.com. You can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes, or you can listen to the podcast over Blog Talk Radio. We really want to thank you for telling your friends and family about all they can discover through Full Power Living and for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Write in and let us know where you are and when you're listening, and if you have any questions or special shows you'd like to hear. And I'd also like to mention Brent Marchant, who is also a student of Seth, and who, following our March 31st program, posted the program on his website. And Brent has a blog, which you can reach at Get the Picture, Brent Marchant, brentmarchant.blogspot.com. Just look up Brent Marchant on Google and you can find him. where he talks about spiritual themes in movies. So if you're unaware of him, I'd really like to draw your attention to Brent. And thank you, Brent, for posting our show and for your interest in this as well. Brent also appeared on this program, and you can listen to his show if you look in the archives. Next week, our guest is Emily Gower, who is author, writer, speaker, and mentor. And she travels the globe inspiring people to live a meaningful life and has issued this challenge. I wrote a book in 16 days. What are you capable of? So I'm looking forward to having a lively and fulfilling discussion with Emily, and encourage you not to miss a single episode of Full Power Living. So our guests today are my longtime friend and colleague, cultural creative life coach Dakey Fox, and Paul Helfrich, PhD, who has been studying the Seth materials and for more than 30 years, and he's been sharing what he's learned in the form of lectures and ELIS administration and writings. And I want to tell you to check him out at Paul Helfrich, PaulHelfrich.com or NewWorldView.com. So, do we have a caller, or do we not have a caller here? Yes, hi.
Eileen?
Yes.
Hi, it's Shira Marin calling.
Hi, Shira. Welcome.
Hi, good day to you, and good day to you all. This was a very lively conversation that put me in mind of something that I wanted to bring up and ask both of your guests today. And that is, you know, I'm a very long-time student of consciousness and very much interested in the self as the primary source. And when I say self, I mean Carl Jung's sense of the self as the prime source of all of the potential that we have to express and the source from which we can draw on to guide our lives. And I was wondering how each of your callers might relate to what I'm saying in terms that are more like channeling, because I know in my own work, I turn to the self. As a psychologist, I support people in connecting to the self as that source which can be the guide for their soul work, for their outer world behavior, and so forth.
Okay, who wants to dive in? Paul, you want to start with that one?
Sure, I'll start. First, I would just like to mention that Jane Roberts actually channeled a bit of material from the worldview of Carl Jung, and it's in the book Psychic Politics for any listeners who have that book or are interested in that reference. And as far as the self goes, in that material, Seth commented on the material of Jung that came through, and he said that Jung's collective unconscious scratches the surface of this deeper multidimensional self. So I just want to try and situate Jungian psychology in terms of the Sethian view of the self. And so what I would add to that is earlier I used this iceberg analogy, that the tip of the iceberg is the little self, the little I, the outer ego that lives and dies in space and time. This vast submerged bottom of the iceberg is a middle layer, actually. It's a middle I or self, and this is the self that I think Shira is referring to and Jung is referring to, and it's very, very, very important. But then there's also a third I that I call the big I, which is the concept of all that is, and that is the transcendent, ineffable, inexpressible in its totality, big I, the totality of the one. And that is the self with a capital S, and all the other selves within that are part of this gestalt consciousness, which is basically one made of many. So it's very important, and it's a deep source of inspiration, a deep source of healing and therapy as well, and something we tap into with the channeling phenomenon.
Thank you. Dickie?
Yeah, you know, it's an intriguing form that Shira's offered here, and it reflects back, actually, as to where we left the conversation in the first segment for me, so it's a great transition. because one of the things I think is really important about channeling and the adventure of connecting with the energetic realm, be it of ourselves or of consciousness that might not be embodied, is the yardstick that Hilarion always put forward. There were two things. One was he would never comment on other channels and other information. They wouldn't, because they were a group consciousness, which just further muddies the water, so I'll just let that slip. But anyway, the other thing is that if by your fruits shall you know them, which of course has a biblical reference, is a biblical reference. And what it means is that there are no quick answers. There are no right, wrong, yes, no. That is the material realm. In the energetic realm, there's an interconnectivity of information. And you have to see if something is useful to you. It doesn't have an intrinsic right, wrong, good, bad value in itself, but it's what we choose to do with the resources that we have. And part of our resource is what Shira is referring to, you know, that people come with many layered understandings of themselves and the world. And as a therapist, I'm sure she weaves those into the forward conscious mind and interacts with those things. The value of channeling is that, again, it helps us to discern reality and to enter more fully into the energy of how things interconnect, not just the this and that of life.
Thank you. And Shira, thank you for your question also.
You're welcome. It's nice to see how these ideas integrate, and I think really valuable for all the listeners.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for calling. I want to just segue off of something you said there, Dakey. I find that a lot of people get concerned about whether they're going to hear bad things, whether there's evil in what's being said. And I know, Paul, you've investigated the issue of pathology. My own experience has been that the more I connect with myself and allow myself to stay in a state of love, the less that's a concern for me at all. And I'm going to suggest that it may be that my vibration gets into synchronization with a higher vibration, so I don't even have to worry about whether there's evil out there. It doesn't come to me. And I want to check that with those of you who've been working with it. Is that a reasonable way of looking at it?
From the Sethian point of view, Eileen, that's spot on. Basically, if you are creating your reality through your thoughts, your beliefs, your emotions, feelings, and so on, in the light, so to speak, in a higher state of mind, the darkness, the shadow side that we all have, is held at bay or neutralized. And it's interesting to note that this submerged part of this iceberg self, as Dakey was saying, is actually neutral. And if we want to go into the dark side, or what Ken Wilber calls the Darth Vader move, we can go into the shadows, and where evil and darkness and dis-ease and pathology occur, they are part of our experience here, or we have a choice and the free will to stay in the light, and stay in the light, basically, that says it all. But a key element is to not repress and deny our dark nature. It's something, and you know, both as coaches and therapists, we have to find ways to embrace that, allow it to express itself. And one classic thing that Seth says, when you're dealing with emotions, you have to allow the storm, the passion, to come through and express itself, because when you bottle it up and you repress it time and again, time and again, time and again, that's when it explodes into horrific violence. And so there's a thing he calls natural aggression, that our impulses are naturally aggressive to express these bottled up fears, anxieties, disappointments, whatever evil, bad things that happen to us in our lives, that we have to contend with them. So bottom line, it's very important to not completely ignore or repress the dark side. And through that, we come into the light. And Carl Jung said, we make the darkness light. We bring the subconscious into consciousness, and that's a process by which we actually can attain enlightenment. We're in an enlightened state.
I love that statement. As a person who works with emotions all the time, I keep running into people who go, oh, we can just meditate those away. We don't really have to work with them or acknowledge them. And I believe that emotions, of course, are a gift to us, and they help us see where we need to make changes, what actions we need to take, and so forth. And if you try to ignore them or not go into them, not notice them, you can't reap the benefits of that.
Absolutely, there.
Right. Yeah. And I, for me, the nature of evil, especially in this context of channeling, I think that, you know, we all have different experiences, and you know, as often as I might be saying that, it's imminently true every time. It's not been my experience to encounter evil in the way that I think some people do. So in saying that it's something that, well, to me, let me say it this way, sorry, that it's energy. And frankly, I consider it somewhat evil when my cat decides, you know, to pee on my bed. You know, it's like evil is an experience, again, it's energy. And I think in some ways what you're asking or what you're inquiring about here, Eileen, is about some materialistic conglomeration that there's some evil out there, you know, lurking towards us, and that many people experience that, but that the evil is not a thing, it's an energy, and we can, you know, the more we learn about operating as an energy being, the more that experience you started talking about, which is the love that fills us from the inside, can help us frame the experience. And for a space or a frame for that, I just want to name that, at least for me, there is a question, and I believe that there is a divinity to everything in answer to that question. What is life? Is there evil and good? Well, you know, it all comes from a creative source that I identify as love. So being able to fill myself or know that I'm coming from love and being grounded in that makes the experience that I might have as evil different than some kind of enemy to deal with or be afraid of.
Good point. Well, here's another one that we have just a couple minutes for. I know, or at least my learning is, that for the first time in human history, we humans are conscious. We now know, especially with the help of Jane Roberts and Seth and Robert Butts, that we are conscious, that we create our own reality. But it also appears to me that we're changing. For example, read the newspaper. It's not as easy to keep secrets as it once was. And I think that we're evolving into a human group that will need to tell the truth, that it won't work for us not to tell the truth. And we've also been talking here about how we're expanding our acceptance of our own spiritual nature, and we're seeking consciously to evolve, to relate and partner consciously, and so forth. So I want to know how important channeling has been to help facilitate these changes. What do you think, Paul?
Channeling has been involved in the creation of every mass religion that we have. So as we go back with the historical view of channeling, in the Old Testament, we hear God speaking to the prophets. But in the New Testament, that stops. God no longer speaks to the prophets after the arrival of Jesus Christ and moving forward. Interestingly, though, with Islam and the prophet Muhammad, the archangel Gabriel spoke to him. And so this channeling phenomena has been involved in revelatory material coming from the submerged part of this collective gestalt self into the world of space and time to fit the cultural needs. And as you were saying, we are evolving. The physical world is going through an evolutionary process that is constantly becoming and changing. So those teachings calcify over time, and the channeling ability comes and goes in popularity. And I also want to mention, in the Tibetan culture, they call it mind treasure. There's other Tibetan words for it, but they have a rich history of channelers and dream yoga and other practices that are just amazing and not well known in the West, but they have been going on for the last 15,000 years in that tradition as well.
Wow, thank you. Well, we're up to our second break, so we're talking today with Paul Helfrich, who is a Seth scholar and a consciousness investigator, and we're talking with cultural creative life coach Dakey Fox, who is a channeling facilitator. If you have questions, we want you to ask them on chat or call us, as Shira did recently, on 800-630-7858. We've got lots more for you on Full Power Living following this break.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the emotional pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. We're back with channeling facilitator and cultural creative life coach Dakey Fox and Paul Helfrich, PhD, who for more than 30 years has studied the Seth materials and shared what he's learned with the world in the form of lectures, e-list administration, and writings. He's at paulhelfrich.com, P-A-U-L-H-E-L-F-R-I-C-H.com on the web. And, Paul, I note when I look at your site that you have a really interesting teleseminar course called Seth Revealed, Secrets of Conscious Creation, that's starting up on June 14th. I think people can find out about that on your site at newworldview.com. Tell us just a little bit about that in case people are interested in signing up.
Sure. Thanks for mentioning that. We're offering our very first course at New World View called Seth Revealed, and it occurs over 8 weeks. So there are 8 2-hour weekly sessions, and we'll be covering the entirety of the Seth material from a very broad overview based on the research that I've done. So we'll be exploring your true self, your place in the world, how we can live in harmony as broad themes to look at all of the Seth material and how it works together to explore the mechanics of conscious creation. So we're challenging our audience, for those of you who are ready to move beyond the secret into the details and the real mechanics of conscious creation and this iceberg self. Check out newworldview.com for this course, and if you have any questions, please feel free to contact us.
Great, thank you. Now, one thing I've always been fascinated with, the fact that entities in other forms, not of this world, seem to need to step down their vibration in order to reach us here on the earth, so that they need someone to channel because they can't give their message directly. So I want to know your collective thoughts about whether that's true, and what it is. Would they not be understood? Can they not communicate in a way that we can hear them? Or do we need somebody to provide the spin that we would give by taking something through a human brain?
Just generally, I think that if we stay with this iceberg analogy, that to create the physical world requires a tremendously complex set of variables within consciousness. And we have to keep in mind that this process has been going on for billions and billions of years. So while it's theoretically possible for an entity to, you know, in a magical sense, materialize a body and present information, and in fact there's a playful example of that in one of the Oversoul 7 books. It's the third Oversoul 7 book, in which 7 creates a body temporarily to go and interact with the characters. Now that's a fictional example of that, and so I would say it is theoretically possible, but I think it's exceedingly difficult even for the soul realm, for those entities, even of Christ-like stature, to focus their energies in such a way to maintain a physical form and bring all the cultural values, the linguistic subtleties, sense of humor, all those nuances. So it's much easier to contact through the subconscious of someone who's already manifest. And remember, beneath this tip of the iceberg, at the soul level, there's a much more merged or integrated type of collective consciousness going on. And by the way, Seth calls that framework 2 and the physical world framework 1. So it makes sense that channeling is just the easier way through this complexity to get the message across from the soul realm.
Thank you. So, Dinky, when you and I talked, to get back to the good and evil, but actually I think you talked about the wicked problems of the world. You were musing about how channeling might be able to help with that. Will you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes, the good and evil is a rather far cry from my use of the concept of a wicked problem. By wicked problem, I meant the kind of thing that exists with many tendrils. So all the areas of personal and material and business and governance and cultural norms are involved when we consider addressing the peak oil crisis of should we be burning fossil fuels, or how to deal with having enough energy without creating sources that, like what's recently occurred in Japan, may lead to a devastating effect of nuclear meltdown, for instance. So there are ways in which we're faced with population and issues about our material realm and our well-being, the well-being of our species, of the planet, as well as these more personal things about our lives. And that's a wicked problem, any one of those. And I was involved with John and Hilarion with a man named Bill Kautz back in the 80s, and he created the Center for Applied Intuition, where he created a way that he would interview various channeled entities and come to intuitive consensus about what I would consider perhaps a specific, but for me a wicked problem. And I just think that would be a wonderful way of being a vital tool for assessing this ever-increasing amount of information and resources that are available to us as we come into knowing and becoming more familiar with the energy realm, which may even amount to our understanding of energy to the point where we create a free energy device if we put our attention on it. So, you know, whether it's cleaning up the Gulf of Mexico after an oil spill, or figuring, you know, creating a new wheel in some way, I just think that would be a fabulous application of channeled information and engage people where we really need it.
Thank you. Paul, what are your comments on that?
That's right on, and one thing I wanted to add to that is the submerged part of the iceberg self uses what Seth calls inner senses. And they're complementary to our physical senses and our cognitive or mental senses. So learning to use these inner senses from a scientific point of view is what part of this emerging new world view, this shift in consciousness and how it's being imaged in all sorts of other metaphorical ways, paradigm shifts and so on. So learning to develop our inner senses is something that Seth was very big on and provided a lot of information on. And that will open the gateway to find solutions like these alternative energy sources that are have a different paradigm, a different business model, and so on, and are a game changer.
So I have another question. I just got back from vacation, and on my vacation I was reading a channeled work channeled by Esther Hicks with her husband Jerry of Abraham. It's called The Astonishing Power of Emotions. And I was very, I really enjoyed the message of that book. But they have a, Abraham has a different message than Seth. Seth has a slightly different message than Hilarion. Each one of these channeled beings or collections of beings has a way of explaining the nature of personal reality. So the question is, why do we have these different ways and if there is, quote, a way that things happen or that they're done, why don't these channels and channeled energies say the same thing?
I have a very quick answer to that. Well, I'll throw something out. It's a much longer answer, of course. Seth introduced something he called the nine families of consciousness in the unknown reality. It's a very esoteric concept. It's actually found in esoteric Christianity as the spiritual hierarchies that are found in Rosicrucianism, for example. These nine families are essentially a typology of consciousness and innate intention that are imbued in the creation of the universe. So essentially, in the broadest brush of this, if you think of it as a rainbow of nine colors that create our physical reality, there's a red, there's an orange, there's a green, there's an indigo, etc. They are complementary, they work together, there's infinite shades of those nine, there's hundreds of thousands of permutations, and therefore the consciousness that manifests through those souls, through those nine families, have an innate color or essence tone to their personality tone, and they learn differently, they process information differently, and together they create a wonderful symphony of consciousness. Therefore, we need different modalities, different messages, different altitudes to bring inner knowledge and remembrance back to all of them. And this is one way.
Thank you for that answer. And I would add to it that, from a kind of pedestrian view, as I had in conducting channeling, it was a partnership that the entities and the voice and the information that comes through is a partnership with the person who's doing the channeling. And so, again, just like there are nine families, we all have, a different vibration. And the message, sometimes it is the same message, but it's coming through in different ways, not just to reach the people who are more, as Paul would reference, in that family, but because the message itself has different facets that reveal the truth of it. It's not just one thing in an absolute way. It's an experience, and when you have 12 or 9 or 25 different ways of saying the same thing, the experience is more likely to come through. And in the energy realm, experience rather than fact or a point of experience is more important. So that's another way, of the channeling experience giving us an access to the rest of the iceberg.
Great. I'd really like to keep going with this, but Paul, I know you have another engagement, so let me stop here and let you both know what a pleasure it's been to get the two of you together and talk on this topic. Thank you, Paul, for being with us today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
All right. And thank you, Dave, that you've put in and for the years that you've participated with me on this show. I really appreciate you.
Yes, it's great fun here.
Okay, so I want to remind our listeners,
check out Paul Helfrich at paulhelfrich.com, P-A-U-A, PaulHelfrich, and also newworldview.com if you're interested in the course we were discussing. And you can write to Dakey Fox by writing her at coachdakeyfox@gmail.com. And thanks to both of you for sharing your work, your wisdom, your vast experience, and most of all, your love with us today. Next week is June 2nd, 2011. We're talking with Emily Gower about what you are capable of. She says she wrote a book in 16 days, and she wants to know what you're capable of. So join us live on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Subscribe on iTunes or listen to our archives at emotionalpro.com and blogtalkradio.com. For now, let's extend our thanks to our producer extraordinaire, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, for great sound and great engineering today. And I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention, not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.